This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
Welcome to Brew Crime. Join me, Mike, and guests as we explore the world of true crime. This is a podcast where we pick a theme, cover a few cases, and pair it with a craft beer. You can find us on social media at Brew Crime or our website at brewcrime.com, or you can find us on any podcast app at Brew Crime Podcast. Join us as we discuss the horrible crimes that surround us and maybe tip a bottle back as you do it.
Hello and welcome to Reverie True Crime. I'm your host, Paige. Maybe it can be slightly charming if you meet someone in a bar or a club and they act like they want to get to know you better, showering you with compliments and attention. You're both flirting back and forth. You may feel those little butterflies inside. Or you might feel creeped out because everyone is different. They eventually grab a napkin and begin sketching you because you're so beautiful or handsome. You may think that it's so sweet and a little romantic. So let's say you both leave the bar together. You two either want to go back to their place, maybe go for a nice walk and have conversations, share some kisses, and get a little more intimate. But that's not what that person who drew the sketch of you has in mind at all. The slightly romantic feeling you may have had dissipates, and suddenly turns into unbearable fear. Your heart drops to your stomach, and there's no turning back. This is the story of a serial killer only known as the Doodler, sometimes referred to as the Black Doodler. Let's get started. The 1970s gay bars and nightclubs in California were the place to be to get your groove on to the latest disco, have drinks, meet people you can relate to, make friends, and maybe even find a lover for the night. Or meet someone who happens to become the love of your life. Back then, people of the LGBTQ+ community were either not ready to reveal that part of themselves, and if they had, a lot of people were disowned and didn't have many people they could turn to. The nightclubs and bars for the community became a safe haven and a great outlet. Unfortunately, not many things have changed since then, because some LGBTQ+ people get treated the same today by family and people they thought were their friends. But it was a lot more common back in those days, because being out and proud was kind of taboo. In San Francisco, California, 1974, a man who is still unknown to this day would go to the gay bars and nightclubs, meeting men and sketching their pictures. After making the person feel comfortable enough, they would agree to take off and go have sex. There were some witnesses who saw him frequent the Castro gay bar. This mysterious man claimed to be a student of art, specifically studying commercial art. There may have been some underlying issues, police suspect, which could have been this man's motive to kill only gay men. I'll discuss that later. Gerald Kavanaugh, born on March 2, 1923, was 50 years old in January of 1974. He was from Canada and resided in San Francisco, California. He was a hard-working Catholic man employed at a mattress factory. He and the mystery sketch artist met at a gay bar where Gerald became the first known victim to this doodling killer. Allegedly, a male made a phone call to the police at 1:30 in the morning on January 27, 1974. Some think it may have been the sketch artist himself, because they wouldn't say who they were, but this person said he came across a body at Ocean Beach. It was discovered that Gerald was stabbed to death, and he did try his best to fight back, because he had many defensive wounds. He was fully dressed and lying on his back when he was found. He was actually identified as John Doe number 7 for a long time. Joseph Stevens, better known as Jay, was a 27-year-old, well-known drag queen. He had recently distanced himself from the drag scene and was wanting to pursue being a comedian. He did do one show 8 years prior, and everyone loved him. The scenarios between the sketch artist and Joseph were very identical. Joseph was found by a lady who was just strolling along Spreckles Lake. He was also murdered by the doodling, knife-wielding maniac. He had blood all inside of his nose and mouth, which suggests that he was stabbed in the stomach. Just the night before, Joseph was at the cabaret club in the neighborhood of North Beach. Police think that Joseph was the one who drove them to the Golden Gate Park, where they later walked to the lake. Claus Crispin was a German man who was employed at Michelin, married with children. He was only coming from Germany to San Francisco to stay with his friends and had been there for about 3 months before his tragic fatality. Maybe he was staying with his friends in San Francisco to experiment or explore that part of him that he didn't feel he could otherwise. The last place he was seen was in Bojangles. Claus was also discovered at Ocean Beach, where Gerald had been found just months before, and a few weeks after Joseph. On July 7, 1974, a woman was minding her business and having a typical day of walking her dog when she came across his body. The way his death was described was a little more brutal than the first two. The killer had sliced Claus's throat 3 times, and he was stabbed around 15 times. He had a tube of makeup in his pocket. His body was transported back to Germany, where he was laid to rest. Ocean Beach seemed like the spot the murderer preferred to either take them to and murder them there, or use Ocean Beach as his dumping grounds of these men's bodies. In May of 1975, back again at Ocean Beach, Frederick Capen, or Cap'n, a 32-year-old nurse in the Navy and Vietnam War veteran, was found. The way the sand looked, his body was likely dragged 20 feet. His death was caused by multiple stabs to his aorta and heart. Frederick had even saved the lives of 4 men while they were all being shot at, and he was given a prize medal for it. There is only one last known victim of this sketch artist's horrific acts, and that was 66-year-old Harold Goldberg. He was a Swedish sailor who had been all over the world. Harold had been to Boston, Yokohama, Liverpool, and Cuba. He became a U.S. citizen in 1955. Unlike the rest of the men, he was not found at the Ocean Beach. This time was different. Maybe they were on a walk and it was convenient. Who knows? But Harold's body had been found in June of 1975 in Lincoln Park. The killer left his body in an igloo-looking pile of bushes. He was there for about 2 weeks without anyone noticing, and he was already in the stages of decomposition with maggots and fly larvae all over his face. According to the pathologist, Harold was already going downhill, slowly dying of portal cirrhosis. This incident was definitely different than the rest due to the location and having his pants unzipped, removed, and he either didn't wear underwear or the killer took it as a so-called trophy. The doodler is said to be a black male, and police made note that all of his victims were white men of the LGBTQ+ community. As this strange sketch artist was killing his unsuspecting victims, there were more gay men being killed, but some were able to get away. One victim gave police information that connected the attacks and the vicious killings. Victims of the assaults were able to help piece together what this man looked like, and a sketch was made of the man suspected to be the doodling killer. As he was described by survivors and investigators, he was a skinny black male, somewhere between 19 and 22 years old. The man was suspected to be upper middle class and gifted with intelligence that was above average. The victims all said that they were told he was supposedly studying commercial art, as mentioned earlier. He was a little shy, seemed to have a personality that was very serious, and gave the impression to be, at times, lost in his thoughts. The survivors said that the man told them, quote, "All you guys are alike," which they took as meaning all gay guys were the same. It was reported that a man in Los Angeles was about to get into bed with a young black male who looked like the sketch of the doodler, but when a knife fell out of the young man's pocket, he made a smart move to change his mind. It is speculated and believed by police and others that the doodler killed way more than 5 people, possibly responsible for up to 16. Other people think that the police give this sketch artist way more credit than he deserves, because after 1975, the killings by this particular person seem to have stopped, or if he was still active, he changed his whole routine of where he would go, or what he would do, and where he would take the bodies. When the investigation first kicked off, investigators thought they might be dealing with 3 different people instead of just one. One young male was interrogated as a suspect, but there was one issue. The 3 survivors were not ready to reveal that they were gay by testifying in court against this person. So unfortunately, this suspect got away with no criminal charges against him. He was very cooperative with the police during all of the questioning, but there was never a confession. To this day, police think that that was their man, but since the 3 survivors would never come forward, he could not be tried or convicted of anything. They've never even released this suspect's name. The survivors never have come forward to say that this was the guy who attacked them, and no one has come forward with information. Someone must know something. There's always at least one or a handful of people that know, but may never talk. Another man who looked just like the sketch was arrested when he went into a bar and he was telling people there that he would like to draw them. He had a book of sketches, and he was toting a butcher knife. He was taken in for having a concealed weapon, and he also assaulted a homicide inspector while he was being questioned. So he had another charge tacked on of aggravated assault, but that was basically it. There were no more developments in the case when it came to this suspect. But the suspect I talked about before this one, that's the guy they still think was the one. Since the police knew the man's name, they checked into him and found out that he was going to a psychiatrist. They contacted the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist told the investigators that the suspected doodler admitted during one of his sessions to committing the brutal murders. In some sources, they mention the suspect having trouble with his own sexuality, And maybe that was why he targeted gay men. Or maybe it was only because it was easier to get away with killing someone gay at the time. As far as the three survivors, one was a diplomat who met this unknown man at an upper market restaurant, and they were having a midnight snack. In the Chronicle, it states that he, the suspected doodler, asked the survivor if he had any cocaine. When they went back to the apartment of the diplomat, the possible doodler stabbed him 6 times. Another survivor was said by police to be a famous entertainer, and the third survivor was well known in San Francisco and even left the city, ignoring all phone calls. One of the many frustrating things about this case is that there is not a lot of information about the victims or the killer. Nobody can be 100% certain that all of these killings were done by the same person, because gay people were targets of many murders around this time. But reportedly, he did leave a few napkins behind of his artwork at the crime scenes, but not at every one. So we can't say definitively that all of these killings of gay men were done by him. Also, the year before these murders started to occur frequently, the American Association Board of Trustees had just stopped categorizing homosexuality as a disease. Other victims and killers got more attention in the 70s than these cases ever did. It's suspected that it could be possible that the media didn't consider gay people's lives being taken as an important priority, much like things still are today when people who are sex workers, trans, or drug dealers get murdered. Their lives don't seem to count as much to some. Sourcing from the AWL.com, it says, "The feeling on the street was that police were indifferent to the goings-on in the Castro. Someone named Huberman said, quote, if gay men were assaulted for being gay or robbed, the cops thought gay men had it coming to them, much as they thought women had it coming when sexual assaults happened to them. The example that I continually got from cops is, I can't believe you would just walk into a bar and take somebody home," end quote. In 2018, the case files were dusted off and being looked into again. An age progression sketch was made, and the doodler was starting to get more coverage in the media around 2019. Also, the 911 call was released as well. The man who called about the first known victim but did not want his name to be known. It could have been the killer. If not, they would still like the caller to come forward. Here is the 911 call.
The date is January 27th, 1974, and the time is now 10:30 a.m. We're going to take a portion of the radio transmission that occurred last night at approximately 1:25 a.m. That would be 27th of January, 1974, at 1:25 a.m.
Communications, Mrs. Quintana, may I help you?
Yes, I believe there might be a dead person on the beach at, right across from Ulloa Street. If you follow the street right down to the water. I was walking along there and I saw somebody lying there, but I didn't want to get too close because, you know, you never know what could happen. Okay?
Did you
want to
give me your name,
sir? No, I don't think that's necessary. I just wanted to let somebody know. Maybe needs help or something. But, felt it was my duty to report it.
Okay, fine. Let's look it up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, bye.
The time is
The San Francisco Police Department will give a $100,000 reward to anyone who comes forward with information about the killer that would lead to the prosecution of him as well. The police are also asking for the psychiatrist to come forward. The psychiatrist's surname was Priest, and she said since he was struggling with his homosexual urges, he may have indeed started killing gay men to release his, quote, inner demons. With DNA evidence solving so many cold cases now, everyone is hoping the DNA that was taken from the scenes of the murders will solve these cases, and maybe we'll find out who the doodler actually is. It's been over 40 years, and he would now be in his 60s, and is believed to still be alive, given that the police do know the name of the suspect that they highly believed was him at the time of his interrogation. Nothing can be done without solid evidence, so let's keep hoping that someone will come forward or that the DNA will solve these victims' cases. It's very possible the infamous doodler could still be walking among us, and someone probably knows him, but has no idea of his past. That is a terrifying thought. If you have any information, you can call the anonymous tip line at 415-570-9299, or you can call the San Francisco Police at 1-415-575-4444. Thank you for listening to this episode about the doodler. As I was researching, I came across an article about a new podcast that is strictly all about the doodler. I think they connect with people and talk to a few of the victims' family members, so I will have to go check that out, and hopefully you all will too. I just really hope justice will be served. Until next time, everyone stay safe and take care.